With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
Welcome to the Sam Sorbo Show. I'm your host, Sam Sorbo, here on Mojo50.com, weekdays at 10 a.m., but also podcast over at MikeOnline.com, Spreaker, lots of places you can find the show. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to have some fun today. The meltdown from coronavirus continues, and with me today, I have a few guests to talk about that. We're gonna inspect. I don't know if you saw this. Bill Maher came out with a new statement, really amazing. We're gonna talk about that. Some funny stuff that's going on. James Woods gets into the picture, and then also just the amazing things that we're hearing now about numbers that have been doctored and doctors that have been numbered. I shouldn't say that. All right. So without further ado, I'll throw it over to my guest. Steve Malloy is here to talk about how we don't want to waste this crisis. And he's going to speak to us about climate alarmism. He is the publisher. He's the publisher. Hold on. I have it right here, of junkscience.com. And he's a very clever man. And that's why we want to talk to him about this new report that was just posted at climaterealism.com. Steve, you might not know this. My husband's actually involved in a documentary that's coming out later this year on climate alarmism. And so I think we probably agree on more things than not. But welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Sam.
So what's this idea that climate alarmism is now surfing coronavirus? What the heck?
Well, yeah. So the actual coronavirus has obviously obliterated, you know, all the other news off the out of the media, including the climate hoax.
Well, let me ask you this.
Here's the thing.
The Earth is ending in 12 years. What do we care?
Well, that's right. Less than that, Greta says it's going to end by January 2028. So,
oh, it's amazing because, as far as I know, she actually never went to school to study any of this stuff, and yet the educators are telling us that we have to get educated in order to be worthy of listening to.
I think, as Greta would say, "How dare you?" All right,
you are funny.
Yeah, so these people have been pushed out of the media. No one cares about them anymore because we have this real crisis going on. But, you know, they're trying to figure out how to exploit it. So what I did was put together this report for the Heartland Institute on their website, climaterealism.com, just highlighting some of the crazy things they're saying about how, you know, they can advance their agenda through coronavirus.
How dare you?
There you go. Did you hear that?
What's that?
I said this.
How dare you?
Oh, how dare you? That was pretty good.
Well, it's her voice. I have her on a soundboard here.
Very good.
I couldn't resist. So it's fascinating. They're going to pile on now. By the way, did you know that firing Fauci is like trending number one on Twitter now?
I can see why. It should be.
People are seeing through. They're seeing through this whole thing. It's weird to me.
Well, you know, the real problem here is that, you know, I've worked on public health issues for 30 years, and, you know, there are absolutely no conservatives that have any experience or knowledge about public health. I mean, it's one of these fields like education. Conservatives have completely vacated. So now President Trump is kind of at the mercy of people like Fauci, who is a big Hillary fan, and Deborah Birx, who is an Obama appointee. And, you know, the public health bureaucracy has been owned and operated by Democrats for the last 40 years. It's inept, it's corrupt, it's unprepared, it's politicized. And, you know, they've kind of forced President Trump into this crazy lockdown, and we need to get out of it as soon as possible.
Now, my understanding is that Austria is coming back to work, and they have a very conservative, nationalistic even, prime minister or president, whatever they elect over there. It's Austria. Who cares? But they, you know, they've got him in office, and he's just saying, hey, okay, it's enough already. I've been ranting yesterday. I ranted about this idea that there is only this choice. And that's what Fauci came out and said. This is our only option. But that's patently untrue. There are other options. And that's so, you know, and going along with that option, that singular option that we're given, which, hello, why aren't more people rebelling? We live in a free society, right? You would think that people would go, well, don't give me only one option. I want more. But along with that singular option is that the only way out is through a vaccine, which, of course, is also patently untrue. You could just get the virus and then get better.
Yeah, no, I mean, this just shows you that, you know, even in the United States where, you know, we have, you know, we value individualism and hate collective action, you know, even in the United States, this can happen where people get panicked into handing over all their freedoms.
Right. And so you write here, actor Matthew Modine tweeted, "With crisis can come opportunity. NASA and climatologists can use this tragedy to demonstrate how human behavior affects a world without borders. Economies based on purchase and consumption is an environmental disaster and unsustainable for 7.6 billion people."
Yeah. No, these people want to go from this lockdown into climate lockdown. I mean, they are, you know, they are not looking forward to the airline industry coming back. I mean, they're not looking forward to.
But it's weird because
any sort of normality.
It's weird because it almost reads the opposite, because we're demonstrating how human behavior, how we can't live in a world without borders, how we need borders. They're actually making a case against themselves, because the lockdown is the imposition of borders.
Well, these people, you're right.
By the way, we're living in the Green New Deal. No airplanes, don't get in your cars, don't go anywhere. This is the Green New Deal. Welcome to, and empty shelves, I should say, in the supermarket. Welcome to it.
Yeah, climate alarmists make the case against themselves every time they open their mouth. You know, I have one tweet in here where this is a Sky News, you know, UK columnist, and he says, well, you know, youthful climate activists should appreciate coronavirus because it's going to wind up killing old people, most of whom are climate skeptics.
There's a terrible...
They're sick.
And by the way, there is a terrible sort of, I don't know if you could call it a meme, but an idea out there that the Chinese actually let this loose in order to kill off their old people, and it got out of hand.
So many Chinese. I don't know.
Right. No, I'm not saying that's true or not. I'm saying that's reflective of, you know, other people seeing the damaging results. But I've covered I think it was a reporter who said, you know, the good news is this will negatively affect more conservatives than liberals. Yeehaw! Like, let's ride this one all the way home.
Older. It skews older, and it's going to kill more. It's a twisted thought pattern.
Well, her point, strangely, was that because they don't believe in science, they're more likely to get infected. Because Trump support, like, it's just insane.
Like which in is New York
so,
City?
Which is so scientific, right?
Yeah, right.
So President Obama tweeted, "We've seen all too terribly the consequences of those who denied warnings of a pandemic," which include, by the way, Nancy Pelosi, Dr. Fauci himself.
Right.
"We can't afford any more consequences."
But then
he says this, "We can't afford any more consequences of climate denial." What does that have to do with pandemics?
Well, it doesn't, but this is what the whole report is about, how they're, you know, the climate has been pushed out. They're trying to figure out how they can get back in the conversation, and they want to go from this police state into the climate police state. They're crazy.
It's like, you know what? We need to clean the kitchen. Okay, but what about tomatoes? Seriously, that's the correlation. Okay, everybody, let's clean the kitchen. Okay, but what about tomatoes? I can't even think of anything as ludicrous as this. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm an education person, right? And so now I've been harping on education. And the problem is that we are not educated anymore to think. We have been schooled, and basically schooled to not think. And so when Obama makes a correlation somehow between people denying warnings of a pandemic and consequences of climate denial, there are no correlations except that people deny, Which people do. Yes, by the way, it's totally legal and allowable for people to deny things.
Because they may be deniable.
They might be free exercising their free will, right? Their free choice and their free will.
Yeah, you know, it's okay to deny that carbon dioxide emissions are going to destroy the planet. That's okay.
Well, how about this? How about this? How about President Obama's a smoker?
Yeah, I mean, so, yeah. Absolutely.
Talk to me about the consequences of denial, Mr. President. You smoke cigarettes, okay? You're like a walking denial right there.
For decades.
Who's the science denier now? I'm sorry. Okay. America is, this is Max Boot. I'm just taking this from your stuff here. America is unusual in having a major party devoted to climate denialism. Oh, that's what we've become now. We're a party devoted to climate denialism. And it's funny because I don't deny the climate. In fact, I go outside every morning. I peek my head out the window to see what I want to wear.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, poor Max Boot. He's become a victim of Trump derangement syndrome, and now he just spouts the same sort of leftist nonsense that every, you know, climate bedwetter does. It's just another, you know, if you question anything,
you know, you're not allowed. But he's got that article. The coronavirus shows how backward the United States has become. These people are so quick to crap on the United States, are they not? It's too much.
They are. You know, that there was an op-ed in the New York Times the other day written by a Vietnamese refugee who said that, you know, the notion that America is exceptional is a total myth, and the coronavirus proves it. And, you know, look, dude, you can go back where you came from if you think it's so great someplace else.
That's crazy. Then why are you here?
Yeah, why are you here?
I'm not saying you should leave. I'm asking you why you're here. In fact, this goes back decades, but I made an acquaintance in New York who was a foreigner, and he was there to sort of create a life for himself because he came to the United States, right? That's what you do. You go to try to grasp the American dream. And he did nothing but sort of bitch and complain about the problems with America and the fact that it was so much better over in France. And so I finally said to him one day, I said, well, why don't you go back to France? Why are you here? And he's like, no, the opportunities don't exist in France. And I said, well, that ought to tell you something.
Yeah.
So quit your moaning, because I don't like to hear it anymore. It doesn't serve me, and it certainly doesn't serve you.
Right.
And then he went off and became a huge success. It was his negativity that had been holding him back the whole time. I'm just saying. So where do we go from here? Mr. Steve Malloy.
Well, we have to open up the economy as soon as possible. And, of course, that's going to bring climate alarmism back into the news, but that's okay. But, you know, I've been fighting them for 25 years.
Sure.
Keep fighting. No problem.
How do we get the message out that the best predictor of a good environment, of a healthy environment, the best predictor is wealth?
Well, you know, that's going to be education. That's your specialty, right? I mean,
Sure. Throw it on my shoulders.
This is not taught in schools. In schools, you know, we teach anti-Americanism and socialism, and we teach everything that makes any sense, except anything that makes any sense. We don't teach, kids don't come out with strong math skills. They know nothing about history, right? So it's hard to just impose these concepts on them when they have no background for them.
Yeah, and they have no skills to discern right from wrong
and
up from down.
And now we encourage teenagers to not question anything.
Right.
You know, there's a whole movement among teenagers for climate. You know, we talked about Greta earlier. You know, there was one of the tweets in my collection is from this 17-year-old climate activist who's she had an op-ed in the Washington Post where she wrote, you know, the elderly should be really grateful we let them live to next year. You know, we gave up spring break so that they could see next year. Now they owe us, so we want climate action. I mean, that is sick. And she's 17, and the Washington Post, I mean, you know, fake news, but, you know, they're validating this kind of thought. And, wow, when I was 17, I don't know about you, I didn't know anything.
No, I knew everything when I was 17, but I didn't flaunt it. I would never have thought to like lord it over other people. That's not a way to make friends.
I mean, my guess is that the Washington Post wouldn't have run an op-ed from you when you were 17.
No, I was too stupid to write op-eds back then. No, it is amazing, but look, Greta came over and lectured the entire UN, all of the adults sit there and allowed her to scream at them like this.
People are dying.
How about this one?
I shouldn't be up here.
Now she's talking sense. Finally.
Yeah.
I mean, no, but seriously, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share all of these with the audience, by the way. I just love them. I covet them. They're my own little Greta soundboard. But here's the thing, because they laud the youth, because youth are stupid, they're easily led.
Yes.
And they're too stupid to know better. But yes. I'll tell you, go ahead.
No, and like someone like Greta, you know, it's politically incorrect to attack her because, you know, she's got her own developmental disorders. And so, oh, my God, and she's a girl, and she's tiny and skinny, and, you know, you can't say anything. So we can allow her to force the world into this climate communism, but you can't criticize her because, oh, my God, she's just a little girl.
Well, I can criticize her. She's Swedish.
Okay, me too.
Not that that's her fault. We don't hold it against her that she's Swedish. Yeah, it's funny. So people can find the report, by the way, at climaterealism.com, which is a website that is dedicated to regularly correcting the left-wing media's lies and alarmist misrepresentations about the climate. And I love it. My husband's movie that's coming out later is Climate Hustle 2. So Climate Hustle was the first one that sort of detailed all of the idiotic pseudoscience. Is that what we call it? What do we call it? Pseudoscience? I think that was a...
Well, you can call it junk science.
Junk science.
Yeah, there's a great website out there, junkscience.com.
Oh, that's right. We can call it junk...
Years.
There you go. Junkscience.com. It is amazing how people hide behind this junk science.
Well, that's junk science.
Yeah, let me ask you something, because you've been at this for a very long time. So you are a self-ordained expert.
Thank you.
Okay. So we had the hockey stick graph, which was from a guy out of India, but he made it up because he doctored the data in order to get a graph that would then sort of get traction, right?
Yeah.
And so the hockey stick graph, completely debunked, disproven, correct?
Well, yeah. Well, the whole thing is crazy because, you know, the hockey stick comes from about 60 trees. And it purports to describe the average global temperature over the last 1,000 years, 60 trees. That's crazy. I mean, you know, we dispute global temperature today, and we have thousands of, you know, digital thermometers
right.
around the world. And we can't decide what the trend is from 1 year to the next. However, we do. But he, you know, Michael Mann did know what the temperature trend was for 1,000. It's crazy. It's totally nuts.
Right.
And plus, you know, he wouldn't share his data or his models.
Right. No, you can't look at my... And by the way, that is the definition of science that we have agreed to, is that if you have results, they can be reproducible by somebody else. They must be.
Well, yeah, and something like going back 1,000 years, since no one can go back 1,000 years and verify anything, it's not really science to start with. You know, it's just some sort of guesswork. But, you know, the fake news media... hangs the word science on it and it becomes science, but it's really not.
Okay,
you know, and then, you know, my favorite part about the hockey stick, I call it the hokey stick. You know, the guy that did it, you know, he used to run around telling people he was a Nobel Prize winner, which of course he wasn't. And, you know, so my view of this is, well, you know, if you're lying about something that is, you know, so easily to check on with whether you're a Nobel Prize winner, what does that say about your black box science?
Yeah, fascinating.
How honest is that likely to be?
Fascinating that he didn't think anybody was going to check whether, you know, to lie about something so obvious. It's true.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. What was the other thing I was going to ask you? Oh, yeah. How do we know that the climate is perfect the way that it is?
Like, well, that's a good question. I ask people that all the time.
Right? So we want to hold it right here. But what about, like, it's really cold up north. And and I'd prefer if it were a little warmer. Like, I'd love to move to Britain and grow wine grapes. But you can't do that right now. But you used to be able to.
You used to be able to. It's a basic question. I mean, how do you know that? So the climate is constantly changing. How do you know that what it's going to change to is necessarily worse? That's a fundamental question. It's just assumed to be worse. Not only worse, assumed to be a catastrophe.
It's really fascinating. Steve Malloy, thank you so much for coming on the program. Junkscience.com and also climaterealism.com for those of you listening who want to do a little bit more research and be able to talk to people about this. Great to speak with you. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. So that was kind of fun. I hope he gets that cough taken care of. Sounded kind of bad. I didn't want to comment on it. All right, we won't comment on it. Moving on. I want to get to some fun stuff. I've got another, I've got Rocky Stucci is supposed to call me. We'll see if that works. I have no idea how my phone is going to handle this, but we will find out as we move forward. I want to tell you about Bill Maher. But let's see, before I do, there was something else that I wanted to share with you all. And nope, that's not it. Dang it, I've lost it. But I will find it again. Have no fear. There are so many great memes going around on the web, like this one. If you ask how bad is the coronavirus, how bad is this lockdown? Well, my neighbor got a pre-declined credit card in the mail. The CEOs are now playing miniature golf. ExxonMobil laid off 25 congressmen. It's terrible. And then this one's really... No, I'm not going to say that one. McDonald's is selling the quarter ouncer. Angelina Jolie adopted a child from America. Parents in Beverly Hills fired their nannies and learned their children's names. By the way, a picture is now only worth 200 words. That's inflation. A truckload of Americans was caught sneaking into Mexico. And this one, when Bill and Hillary travel together, they now have to share a room. That's actually not true. The Treasure Island Casino in Las Vegas is now managed by Somali pirates. And then this one. No, never mind. We'll leave that there. All right, let's move over to Bill Maher and we'll see how well we can do with this.
And finally, new rule.
He started before I was ready, but we'll get to, okay. So I just want to, this is a video that he's put up. It's from Real Time with Bill Maher. It seems like it's like the end monologue of his show. I'm not really sure. This is, I suppose this is his editorial new rule is what it says here. I watched the whole thing. It is amazing. He's so like right on for 65%. Then he goes completely off the rails. So we'll just get started here.
Well, you can't yell at someone for breaking a rule you just made up. Scientists who are generally pretty liberal, have been naming diseases after the places they came from for a very long time. Zika is from the Zika forest. Ebola from the Ebola River. Hantavirus, the Hantan River. There's the West Nile virus and guinea worm and Rocky Mountain spotted fever and, of course, the Spanish flu. MERS stands for Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. It's plastered all over airports and no one blogs about it. So why should China get a pass? Congressman Ted Lieu tweeted, "The virus is not constrained by country or race. Be just as stupid to call it the Milan virus."
I love this.
No, that would be way stupider because it didn't come from Milan. And if it did, I guarantee we'd be calling it the Milan virus.
There you go. All right. We're going to pause it right there. So he's just, he's intellectually honest to a very large degree. And then he gets kind of, he goes off the rails, but I'll get to that. He talks about Lyme disease coming from Lyme, Connecticut. And he said nobody got ticked off about that. And then he pointed out that he had just made a tick joke, which I thought was pretty funny. He says it's not about vilifying a culture, except, and then he talks about the wet markets in China. Now, you know that there's a theory that this virus came from a bat. And in fact, I've seen evidence that does link it to bats, but I've also seen evidence that links it from the bats through the lab, through the Wuhan viral research lab, to basically humans who mutated the virus in order to attack humans. So I don't know that it comes directly from the bats or even from the market. In fact, in the documentary that I watched, and, you know, I'm only getting the information that I'm getting from wherever I'm getting it, right? I try to choose as reliable sources as I can. And so a shout out to Joshua Phillip, who is from the Epoch Times, and seems to be dedicated to finding the truth. The upshot of that documentary is that this is an engineered bioweapon, basically, for all intents and purposes. And whether it was intentionally released, intentionally, whether we are now suffering from an intentional attack, I'm not weighing in on yet. But I think we ought to be open to the possibility of considering that, because I don't think, according to his research, it didn't just spontaneously transfer from the bat to humans because of the structure of the virus itself. And so now the wet markets are reopened, and Bill Maher says that, you know, it's basically being considered racist to attack them. But he's saying it's not racism. It's that it's a horrible, horrible practice what they do in those what they call wet markets, and how absolutely inhumane they are with the animals in the wet markets. And it turns the stomach, and we ought to have them shut. We ought to pressure them to discontinue the practices that go on in the wet markets. That's basically his take. It's also my take. And then he says, you know, it's not racist to attack the wet markets, just like it's not racist to attack the people who force women to wear hijabs. He says that's an abhorrent human rights violation to force another person into a fabric prison. He says the answer then is that we ought to be blaming China. And so he continues with this point, which I thought was pretty salient. Here it is.
We're going to have to ask you to keep two ideas in your head at the same time. This has nothing to do with Asian Americans, and it has everything.
So he's saying we should blame China, and we should not entertain these thoughts that somehow we're being racist bigots. We're not blaming Chinese people. But China is the nation that loosed the virus on the world. And they knew what they were doing because they were already implementing safety precautions in their own country. So they knew that they had something on their hands that we needed protection from, and they failed to protect the rest of the world. Here you go.
I have to ask you to keep two ideas in your head at the same time. This has nothing to do with Asian Americans, and it has everything to do with China. We can't afford the luxury anymore of non-judginess towards a country with habits that kill millions of people everywhere, because this isn't the first time. SARS came from China, and the bird flu, and the Hong Kong flu, the Asian flu. Viruses come from China like shortstops come from the Dominican Republic. If they were selling nuclear suitcases at these wet markets, would we be so non-judgmental? And isn't this pretty close to what they are selling? And the next one could be even worse. If the Chinese military had purposefully infected this country with corona as a bioweapon, we'd be at war with them.
So, my question is, are we? I don't know for sure. He's blaming the wet markets for the virus. I don't believe that the wet markets caused the virus. But I could be wrong. But from what I've seen, the virus is an engineered thing, and bats don't engineer viruses. But hey, if you believe in evolution, then you think that the virus just spontaneously erupted from a bat, I suppose. That would be considered a more science. I don't know. I'm getting myself I'm tying myself up in knots. Listen. He goes on to say that this is actually worse. He posits the idea that if China were going to attack us with a bioweapon, this might look like this. In fact, we've been complaining that China has been manipulating currencies for too long, and that they have to stop their terrible practice of currency manipulation. And he says, isn't this virus like pretty severe currency manipulation? Like, it's really affecting our economy, right? And then he has the strangest, most ridiculous solution to that, which is this. Listen to this.
Actually get shit done.
So he says, pardon his French, he says that China can get stuff done because they're a dictatorship.
They can actually get shit done. This is a dictatorship that for decades enforced a one-child per family policy under penalty of forced sterilization. But you can't close down the farmer's market from hell?
So this is where it's so interesting to me. So he derides them for I'm thinking that he's deriding them for the one-child policy, that China doesn't allow families to have more than one child. Well, now they do, but from what I've heard, it's not really a multiple-child policy because you have to pay $60,000 or whatever to get the license to have a second child. And so it's not really, like, there's your college savings right there, kids. And we didn't even have time to grow old to save for your college education. But what he's saying is, hey, they were so good at the one-child policy, they should shut down the markets. Well, that doesn't really make sense, does it?
They need to use that iron fist.
Listen
and
to
pound
that.
It down like the whole world depends on it.
They love it. The leftists
because
love
it
the
kind
iron
of
fist.
Does. And I hope
they love
that
the
if
iron
someone
fist.
Told Americans that eating Hot Pockets could cause a worldwide pandemic, that we would have the good sense to stop doing it.
Well, maybe we should have.
Although
the,
I wouldn't bet on.
Yeah,
it.
Fine. Maybe we should have the good sense to doubt what the authorities are telling us until it's proven. I just heard that California has had fewer than 1,000 deaths from coronavirus, and it is shut down still. Well, when are they? What? Let me ask this: what is the metric for reopening the state? What? How are we going to determine the metric for reopening anything? It seems like we've embarked on this thing, but we have no plan to get out of it. So how do we proceed then? Right? That I think that the not knowing is more of a hardship on people than this whole quarantine is, frankly, because it's fine to be quarantined if you know when the end is. It's like being pregnant. It's like when you're pregnant, it's tough, but you know it's going to end. As opposed to, oh, I don't know, when my husband had three strokes and they told him, you know, after 4 months, that's pretty much it. That's all the recovery that you'll see. And after 4 months, he was still drooling on the couch. And he didn't know that he was going to recover. I knew it through faith, but that's not reliable, right? I mean, I relied on it, but that was a tough time because he couldn't see the end. And then eventually he started to see the gradual progress that he made, but very gradual. And then he started to get more optimistic. We need to have an end in sight. And the leadership ought to be able to offer us that, since they've locked us down. So this story, I thought this was hilarious, frankly. It's up on Town Hall. Brian Stelter is the host of, I think it's called Reliable Sources, which is so funny. That's an ironic title. He made waves over the weekend when he tweeted a critique. This is off of townhall.com. Tweeted a critique of President Trump that seemed to show a lack of comprehension. So because he's the least reliable source that we have, a lack of comprehension about how the United States government was designed. He tweeted this. Admin officials say the White House has made a deliberate political calculation that it will better serve Trump's interests to put the onus on governors rather than on the federal government to figure out how to move ahead. Let that quote sink in, he wrote. So, his show is supposedly some kind of a fact checker for other media sources. But, and I love this gal, Molly Hemingway. I love this. She got back in touch with him. She said, yes, the U.S. Constitution is a hundreds-year-long plot to help Trump win re-election. Excellent take. Also, it's not a quote, but an unsupported assertion based on reporters' dubious and unverifiable interpretation of what they claim anonymous sources told them. The Stelter's tweet links to an article from the Washington Post, which was also critical of Trump's handling of the Wuhan coronavirus pandemic, but chided what they perceived as the president's lack of a plan, not his yielding power to state and local government. And frankly, I'll be perfectly upfront with you. I wish that he had more power right now. But I recognize that he does not. But he does have a leadership capacity. He could be meeting with governors and encouraging them to put their states back to work. And then it would be a race to the finish. First state back to work wins. And he has the power to incentivize them. I don't know how. I just know that he does. He's a master negotiator. So there's a quote that was actually a quote from the authors of the Washington Post article. So I'm going to read it. The president and his top advisors have fixated almost exclusively on plans to reopen the U.S. economy by the end of the month, though they haven't detailed how they will do so without triggering another outbreak. President Trump has been especially focused on creating a second coronavirus task force aimed at combating the economic ramifications of the virus. Well, it's about flipping time. So that was from the article. And then this, this is the one that's emphasized for Brian Stelter's consumption. Administration officials, speaking on the condition of anonymity to describe internal deliberations, say the White House has made a deliberate political calculation that it will better serve Trump's interest to put the onus on governors rather than the federal government to figure out how to move ahead. Well, the article did not offer any critique of the president for tapping governors and local legislations to choose their own regulations and assess the risk to local communities. Leaving power with the local elected officials is a tenet of federalism and was carefully designed by the founding fathers to avoid overreach and power grabs from the federal government. But if you're an Obama acolyte, then you stood up and applauded when he said, I have a pen and I have a phone. And half of the Congress did when he said that. Half the Congress stood up and applauded the end of their jobs, the end of their usefulness. Because once the president has a pen and a phone, so to speak, and is willing to simply make law as he sees fit, what do we need Congress for? Do you see what I'm saying? So, see, I read the crappy news to you so you don't have to go read it. So that's Brian Stelter, and he's just insufferable. But he is. Let's talk briefly about France. But before we do, I want to tell you my Patriot Supply, now is the perfect time to stock up on an emergency food kit, because we are living in uncertain times. And so why not invest in some peace of mind? Invest in your sanity. The food that they offer is made fresh and then flash freeze dried, and then sealed airtight in a 4-layer heavy duty resealable zipper pack thing that they say it lasts for a quarter of a century. And I believe them, but it's still delicious. So you can get a 4-week emergency food kit. It normally sells for $297. It's now down to $197 just for you. As a thank you for listening to my show, preparewithmojo50.com is where you go. They're also offering free shipping. So it's kind of a really phenomenal deal. Preparewithmojo50.com, 4-week emergency food kit. You can't go wrong. Preparewithmojo50.com. Okay. All right. I'm not sure what happened to Rocky. Supposed to call in. Never called in. We'll have to reschedule that. Let's talk about France. This is off GatestoneInstitute.org. They do such great work there, and it's Guy Milliaire, who is really a phenomenal investigative reporter, called Coronavirus a French Disaster. So the first bad decision was that, in contrast to European Union fantasies, borders apparently do matter. But France never closed them. Instead, it allowed large numbers of potential virus carriers to enter the country. In January of 2020, several hundred thousand masks were available. But on February 19th, President Macron decided to send them to Wuhan as a, quote, gesture of solidarity with the Chinese people. The French government announced that masks would be available soon, but by the end of March, most doctors and caregivers still had no masks. Several doctors fell ill. As of April 10th, 8 have died from COVID-19, and several others are in critical condition. On March 20th, the government spokeswoman, Sibeth Ndiaye, incorrectly said, masks are essentially useless, because that's how an ideologue talks. They talk out their buttholes, because all they want to do is drive their personal convictions with their speech. On February 25th, the renowned French epidemiologist, Professor Didier Raoult, published a video. In it, he said he had found the treatment quickly to end the pandemic, hydroxychloroquine, used with azithromycin. On April 10, he published data showing that he had treated and cured 2,401 patients. Immediately, Olivier Véran, the new French Minister of Health, said that Professor Raoult's statements were unacceptable and that the treatment he was proposing was worthless. In an attempt to quell the controversy, the French government, by decree, authorized Professor Raoult's treatment in military hospitals for, quote, patients reaching the acute phase of the disease, but prohibited family doctors from prescribing hydroxychloroquine. Professor Raoult replied that the treatment was only effective if administered before the disease reaches its acute phase. France's mainstream media would do well to fight harder for physicians to be able to supply hydroxychloroquine with azithromycin and zinc sulfate. The French media would also do well to be more aware of the dirty game China is playing. But are they? No. So there's an attorney in a center-left magazine called Marianne. His name is Régis de Castelnau. He said this, "The behavior of our leaders has been marked by unpreparedness, casualness, cynicism, and many of their acts imply the enforcement of the criminal law. Deliberate endangerment of the lives of others and failure to provide assistance to people in danger are obvious. In war, generals who are judged incompetent are sometimes shot. The president and other officials are well aware of this." Fascinating. So France has some problems. And part of their problems is an inability to reason with facts. Is that how I want to say that? An inability to reason with facts? An inability to accept facts and then use reason to interpret them and form conclusions. Yeah, basically. All right, moving on. Ted Cruz unloaded on the PBS reporter. You remember I played this, I guess it was yesterday. PBS reporter said she challenged Surgeon General Jerome Adams for his incendiary and perhaps racist language, and that there were plenty of people on social media who were very upset and felt that he had singled out Hispanics and black people, and because he used the word abuela and big mama. And so now it's being termed that she is actually manufacturing fake outrage. Well, I guess if you can't find the outrage and you still cite it, then maybe you're creating it. Maybe you are manufacturing fake outrage. So he went, the Surgeon General answered her like right there on the spot and said, "Oh no, I didn't mean anything by it. I call on the Puerto Rican side of my family, we call grandma abuela. So I just, you know, it's a term of endearment. Why would anybody be upset about that? And there, you know, I have family members who are in the black community and they use big mama for grandma. And I can't remember the other words." And he basically just answered her question, which I thought was, I don't know. I admired him. And at the same time, I was like, "Oh, dude, don't, you're giving her too much sort of credit or something." But anyway, he answered her very nicely and just said, "Nope, I didn't mean anything by it." And Senator Cruz said, "Imagine you're a professional NPR reporter. You have an opportunity to ask the U.S. Surgeon General a question in the midst of a global pandemic with over 100,000 fatalities, that's worldwide. And you ask, many people are offended by what you call your grandmother. Seriously, what the hell is wrong with the mainstream media?" That's Cruz's tweet. Also, he tweeted, "Also, the Surgeon General is a highly accomplished African-American physician, and so many white liberals are throwing racial epithets at him that Uncle Tom is now trending." And then he tweeted, "Stop the hate now," in all caps. And for all those liberals triggered by abuela, that's what a whole lot of Hispanics, including me, called our grandmothers. So don't use it as an opportunity to stoke racial and ethnic division, especially in times of crisis. I love that. Good for him. Just lighting into them. Specifically her, but lighting into them. All right. So this last piece, yesterday I ranted a bit about this idea that we're not being given the correct numbers. I'm really struggling with this because I think we're not being given the correct numbers. And I'm not convinced that we are educated enough to even notice. And if we are, maybe we're not educated enough to care, because we certainly have been schooled in how to behave properly, how to execute what you have been instructed to do. That's how we've been schooled, right? So this is off of the Gateway Pundit, and I do have a video clip. I have a couple, actually, if I can find them. This is a doctor. He's a senator and a doctor, Scott Jensen from Minnesota. And he went on the Ingram Angle to discuss how the American Medical Association is encouraging American doctors to overcount coronavirus deaths across the U.S. So I've gone into this before. I'm going to harp on it again because I think it's a really important point. Your worldview really determines your behavior. It determines, because it's your perspective, and your perspective determines your behavior. So if you think that the U.S. is, you know, too big for our britches, then you're happy to delimit the United States, to curtail production, you're happy to harm the economy in order to give other nations a leg up or a step up or a help out, right? And I'm not going so far as to say that, and I'll just use Fauci as an example, that he's doing it on purpose, but I'm saying that he doesn't care, probably, if my understanding of his worldview is correct, that he doesn't care as much about the future and the prosperity of the United States as he does about sort of being in control of this pandemic. And so Dr. Scott Jensen, who's a Minnesota physician and Republican state senator, told a local station he received a 7-page document which coached him to fill out death certificates with COVID-19 diagnoses without even the lab test to confirm the patient actually had the virus. He also disclosed that hospitals are paid more if they list patients with COVID-19 diagnosis. And then he said, okay, hold on, let me see if I can find, I don't know why it's there it is. Okay, so I'm just going to tee it up so you can hear it from him, because it's pretty damning.
Determination of the cause of death is a big deal. It has impact on estate planning. It has impact on future generations. And the idea that we're going to allow people to massage and sort of game the numbers is a real issue, because we're going to undermine the trust. And right now, as we see politicians doing things that aren't necessarily motivated on fact and science, the public's going to, their trust in politicians is already wearing thin.
Well, that's true. All right, now listen to this. I'm running out of time now.
Correct.
Well, let's just take influenza. If I have a patient died a month ago, had fever, cough, and died after 3 days, and maybe had been an elderly, fragile individual, and there happened to be an influenza epidemic around our community, I wouldn't put influenza on the death certificate, and I've never been encouraged to do so. I would put probably respiratory arrest would be the top line, and the underlying cause of disease would be pneumonia. And in the contributing factors, I might well put emphysema or congestive heart failure. But I would never put influenza down as the underlying cause of death. And yet that's what we're being asked to do here.
So they're inflating the numbers because they don't want to look bad when the numbers don't come in commensurate with the dire predictions that they've made. Okay, listen to this.
Conspiracy theories, when you have very challenging public health crises, they are nothing but distractions.
So he's calling, that's Fauci, And he's calling the idea that anything might sort of be different than what they might be saying conspiracy theories. Now listen to this. So this is back to our good Dr. Jensen.
Well, I would remind him that anytime healthcare intersects with dollars, it gets awkward. Right now, Medicare has determined that if you have a COVID-19 admission to the hospital, you'll get paid $13,000. If that COVID-19 patient goes on a ventilator, you get $39,000, three times as much. Nobody can tell me
three
after 35 years in the world of medicine that sometimes those kinds of things impact on what we do. Some physicians really have a bent towards public health, and they will put down influenza or whatever because that's their preference. I try to stay very specific, very precise. If I know I've got pneumonia, that's what's going on the death certificate.
Right. All right. So that's my show today. Just know some of the numbers are not reliable. I think that's really the takeaway. Stay safe, practice your social distancing, especially from the refrigerator, and join me again tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Sam Sorbo. Now go have a great rest of your day.
You can unlock more cash than you realize from your home's equity with a cash-out refinance today. In the last year, average home values have gone up nearly 20%. And with Rocket Mortgage, you can unlock thousands in less than 3 weeks. But you've got to act right now before rates go up. So when you're looking to unlock the cash in your home, Rocket can. Call 833-8-ROCKET today or go to rocketmortgage.com to get started. Rocket.
Rates current as of 12/12/21. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. Call 800-490-1233 for disclosures and cost information.